Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey. Do you ever get the feeling, let's talk about integrity for a minute. Do you ever get the feeling that, you know, you run into somebody and you say, would you like to try something new with me? And they say, oh, no, that's not who I am. I don't like that. And then you say, oh, okay, we won't do that. What is integrity? Is integrity sticking with who you are and never varying? Integrity of self? Integrity of self is I have an image of myself, and that's who I am, and I stick to that. And if anything comes along, like, you know, if somebody says, would you like to try some seaweed, you know, I say, no, I don't try seaweed because that's not who I am. I don't eat seaweed. I don't eat Japanese food. I don't eat, you know. That's the integrity of self. That's what some people do. And that may work. That could be great because at least you feel, you know, you've got one place you could always go home to, which is that belief system, that mental set. Well, my guest today in the studio with me is a guest who wrote a fabulous book that I've enjoyed a lot, The New Psychology of Success, called Mindset. Now, Carol Dweck is our guest, Dr. Carol Dweck. Carol comes to our attention as a result of some research done on with children. And she's done some work with children about how to get children to learn better. But the book really addresses the whole issue of your mindset. And since we've been talking about alpha male, beta male, and all that other stuff, I thought we'd get a little into mindset with Carol and her book. Carol, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. I've had a long-standing love for WBAI, dating from my student days at Columbia in the 60s.
In those student days, and WBAI was like, it was like the source of light. It was
Yes. Amazing. Inspirational.
Absolutely. And it still is. And thanks to you being here, we'll add to the light. Carol, we talked about alpha males.
Is that,
you know, alpha male, everybody wants to be an alpha male.
Yes.
Problem with being an alpha male sometimes is...
The problem with being an alpha male is sometimes you feel you have to be this infallible alpha male, total, unquestioned leader of the pack. But as we were also talking, a real alpha male is someone who feels like, okay, I'm your leader, but I have things to learn from you. I know you. We will kind of go together and learn into the future. The first alpha male, I'd say, has a fixed mindset. He feels that I have a certain amount of intelligence and I have to show that I'm the smartest and the best all the time. The second has more of a growth mindset, saying, I'm a learner. I can cultivate my abilities. The world will throw me challenges. I'll thrive on them and learn from them.
So the first mindset is a mindset of a boss rather than a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss says, I know the way, this is the way, it's the only way we do it. Don't use your imagination. I'm fine, I got it going, follow what I say. And if I don't like what you do, it's because you're not following my path. But the mindset of a more flexible mindset says, I am your leader, I teach you, and you teach me,
exactly.
We learn together.
Exactly.
All right, so now... Let's go to the very description of the two types of mindsets.
People who are in a fixed mindset believe that their deepest qualities, like their intelligence, are just fixed traits. You have a certain amount and that's that. So
you're saying there are two kinds of mindsets. One is a fixed mindset.
Yeah.
The other is a flexible mindset.
Or a growth mindset.
Growth mindset. So here we are again, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody in the world can be divided into two groups. I always love when we find groups.
Well,
I know there's flexibility. I know it, Carol,
yes.
But I love 50% of the people, you know, 80% of the people think they're superior, you know, which means that there is no average. So half the people have a fixed mindset, and some of the people have a fixed mindset and some have a flexible mindset. And, of course, there are variations in between.
Yes.
But let's talk about the extremes.
Yeah, the extremes are
fixed mindset is classic your father, right? Your father. You know, your dad is like, no, you do it my way or you do it no way. My way or mm-hmm. the highway. Fixed mindset.
Yeah, you have a certain amount of intelligence and you have to show how smart you are all the time. You can't admit deficiencies because that means your permanent intelligence.
Well, now flawed. That's the person with the mindset who's talking to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This is not to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So a person who has got a fixed mindset addresses themselves this way.
Yeah.
They believe they cannot vary.
I've got to keep showing I'm smart, otherwise people won't respect me. I won't be special. I won't be alpha. In a growth mindset, people believe my qualities, like my intelligence, can be cultivated and developed through my whole life, through learning, education, dedication. So I'm not afraid of a challenge. I'm not afraid of making a mistake or having a setback. I'm going to learn from these things and keep going better.
Where this really gets stuck, where people with fixed mindsets and flexible mindsets, the difference being in business, it's kind of obvious,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Give us some examples of the fixed mindset in business.
Well, suppose you were passed over for a promotion. In a fixed mindset, you think, what's wrong with me? Why am I deficient? I'll never succeed. Or you might think, they have it in for me. They have their favorites. They're not playing fair. So you blame fixed qualities of yourself or fixed qualities of the business. In a growth mindset, you might go to your boss and say, you know, I really want to be next in line for a promotion. Can you tutor me, mentor me? Tell me what I have to do. What do I have to learn? What can I do better? So it's the idea that you're on the path, but you've got to make corrections. You've got to get input. And so you take these positive steps to learn more.
You know, it's very hard, though, if you have a fragile ego, you know, and a fixed or flexible mindset, certain things are going to knock you out.
A fixed mindset creates a fragile ego because all negative information is about a permanent quality of you. So if you fail a test or don't get a promotion or are rejected, the first reaction is, this says something deep about who I am, and that's kind of the definition of a fragile ego. In a growth mindset, you can still feel crushed, but you come back and say, all right, how can I go forward? How can I do that better next time?
My guest is Dr. Carol Dweck, PhD in psychology from Yale, of all places, right? I like that. Yale, and with us, an author of the book Mindset. Good book, available on Amazon. I like it. I like what we've seen so far. All right, now, fixed mindset versus flexible mindset. Is that what you call them, fixed and flexible?
I call it fixed and growth, but I think
fixed
you're capturing
growth.
You captured it.
A growth mindset says, whatever happens to me, I'm going to look at it as kind of an opportunity. That's kind of simplistic. It's one of the ways that people do things. But one of the things I think we are giving people with a fixed mindset is that the very fix itself may be creating the thing to happen and get stagnant. The very fact that you're stuck in the mud,
mm-hmm.
you know, means that you can't move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though you may be disappointed by one of life's turns, just recognizing this is my current fixed mindset means that at least you'll consider how will I become more flexible.
Absolutely, because if you've had a disappointment in a fixed mindset, the tendency is to protect yourself against further disappointments. Go back, mend your ego, and never let that happen to you again. But that limits your life. So just knowing, as you say, just knowing that there's an alternative way to think about it is so helpful. Knowing that you can think, well, wait a minute, there was information there, or I can be different. It's really helpful in kind of digging your way out of that cocoon and emerging into the world again.
A woman came in for treatment recently saying she had a series of disappointing relationships. And she said, I don't know why I can't find a decent guy. And I said, well, tell me about the guys you're attracted to. I said, who do you go after that you like? She says, oh, I never go after anybody. I only go after men who go after me. The first thing I'm going to do is somebody has to give me a signal that they're interested, and then I will open a relationship with them. Meanwhile, what she's looking for is a relationship with somebody who's significantly stronger, mm-hmm. but she will never pursue them.
Mm-hmm.
So her fixed mindset is, I must be appreciated first because yes. I can't be challenged.
Yes, exactly. I think
I can't take no for an
exactly,
answer.
Exactly, because if you make the first move and put yourself on the line, you can be rejected. And if you think that says something real about you, you're going to avoid that.
Rejection may be one of the most exciting tools we have. You know, it mm-hmm. may be wonderful to find out. You know, like rejection, we always look at it as a terrible thing. Yeah. Rejection. You know, reject. It's like it's annihilation, like it's destruction. But rejection could be telling us a great deal, and we could create a great mindset from the actual thing of rejection.
Yes.
It's almost like we should go along trying to get rejected because we could learn from it.
Yeah. Well, so rejection feels so devastating because you think, this person knows me, and they don't want to be with me anymore. That's in a fixed mindset. Oh, my God, what could be worse? In a growth mindset, you say a couple of things. One is, this may not be a person I'm compatible with, so better know it now than later. Second, people like and dislike each other for many, many reasons. They don't have to be deep-seated. And third, hey, is there a message here? Is there something I may have to change if I want better relationships in the future?
So there are two words that I could think of, rejection and abandonment. People talk about it often. Often, he abandoned me when I was in the movie theater and he went to get popcorn. He abandoned me. You know, they're such huge words that carry such a huge load to them.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't get abandoned when he went for popcorn. You didn't get abandoned when he decided that he was going to go out that night. You didn't get rejected, really, mm-hmm. when somebody didn't call you back. But I guess we have these associations with early childhood
yes.
that bring up this load that make us think of it that
mm-hmm.
way. So one of the clues you might be saying here is that both rejection and abandonment are clues that you're in a fixed mindset.
That's a very interesting observation. Yes, it says that you're carrying with you an expectation that people won't be there for you or that they're going to find something in you that is disappointing and that they'll want to flee from.
So when somebody says no to you about something, it may not be that it's you they are rejecting.
Exactly. And it turns out that when we look at couples who are in a fixed or a growth mindset, the couples in a fixed mindset can't hear no from each other. They really expect to agree on everything and have perfect harmony. And they can't broach topics about a conflict that they might have had. In a growth mindset, it becomes an opportunity. It doesn't mean you never carry baggage with you. We all have our baggage. But it becomes an opportunity for me to explain my baggage to you and you to explain your baggage to me and work together to make the relationship go forward in spite of the baggage rather than.
Right, well, since we're talking about relationships, in a relationship, most people do have fixed mindsets, and what happens is they have these kind of expectations. Oh, we were together for 2 years, and it was very romantic. Now he's no longer attracted to me, so that and everybody will say, well, that's the way it goes. The honeymoon is over, and now you have a sexless marriage. Now you go on from there, mm-hmm. and now he plays golf, and you know...
Mm-hmm.
you stay home and knit, and that's kind of the fixed mindset is, once things happen that I don't like, it's just the way it is.
Yes. Yes, and if something happens, like you're not, for example, you're not getting enough affection from your mate, you think, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with him, something's wrong with the relationship. And in a fixed mindset, it's kind of permanent. You either grin and bear it or you exit. Those are your choices. In a growth mindset, you say, okay, maybe I'm not giving the right signals that I want more affection. Or maybe my spouse or mate grew up in an environment that didn't really express affection. Maybe he or she doesn't know how. But in either case, it's a conversation about what you both need and how you can move forward to meet those needs.
The beauty of that conversation when you have two people with flexible mindsets or growth mindsets is that nobody's blaming anybody.
Right.
You know, it's like, I want to explain myself to
yes.
you.
Yes. I want to tell you about my needs, and I want to meet your needs, and let's find a way that this can happen.
Yes, and so if we talk about it, we don't talk about it accusatorily.
Exactly.
It's not blaming.
Right.
It's like, it's more for information.
Right.
It's like if you were a scientist in a laboratory and you were trying to create something.
Yeah.
You wanted to make crystals, new crystals out of something. Mm-hmm. And you added something to the formula and you said, that didn't work. You'd go talk to one of your friends and say, what do you think we could add to this?
Right.
And they'd say, well, maybe you should try this, maybe you should try that.
Yeah.
If you're talking about chemicals in a laboratory, that's easy. There's no
yeah.
judgment. Let's try it.
You don't say the chemicals rejected me. They
right.
failed and rejected me.
And these are bad chemicals and these are good chemicals.
You're right.
Those chemicals grew up wrong. Well, actually,
right.
people do have chemicals. You know, they think chlorine is a bad chemical and some chemicals have bad names. Whatever happened to radon?
In the basement.
In the basement is absolutely right. Not a good thing anymore. So, Carol, you have a great deal to say about children, and I really would like to talk about this because I think this is important not only about children, but in general, because I think it partially helps us understand, well, okay, we got two issues here. One issue is we had a recent event in West Virginia that I think people are trying to understand. And then I think there's this whole idea of children and their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't I let you do the introduction and we'll take it to Columbine.
Well, children are very sensitive to our messages about fixed and growth mindsets. About how smart they are. Is this something that's just fixed? Or is this something they can develop? About what kind of person they are. Are they a winner kind of person or a loser kind of person? Children, in our studies, we see that they have these antennae tuned to the messages that we give them. And if we want to move to Columbine, I want to tell you about a study we did where let me say that the Columbine shooters were kids who were bullied for many years, and at some point they blew. Well, we did a little experiment where we took children, teenagers with a fixed and growth mindset, and we gave them a scenario that said, imagine that you're in the situation of prolonged bullying, and we explained it. How these taunters, these other cool kids, made them feel like losers, etc. And we said, what would you think and what would you do? Would you believe these were completely normal teens? The kids with a fixed mindset, you know, you're a winner or a loser and that's that. They responded with violence. These are normal kids. They responded with fantasies of retaliation and violence because they were being called a permanent loser in their minds. The kids in a growth mindset said, gee, I'd find out what's wrong. Or first I'd think, what's wrong with them? They don't have self-esteem. They're taking it out on me. I'd recruit parents. I'd recruit the teachers. We'd want to solve this. We'd want to make the school a better place. When I read about the Columbine shooters, it turns out there were kids who were just as bullied, but they didn't go ballistic and they didn't turn aggressive. One of them, Brooks Brown, actually wrote a book where he talked about the growth mindset and how he felt even compassion for the kids who blew, understanding where they had come from. It's not excusing them, but it's giving them a psychology that led there. He was bullied, but with his growth mindset, he didn't go there. He wanted to understand what was happening. And he has since devoted a lot of his life to telling bullied kids not to go the violent path and rather to work for positive change.
I think of the study in the prisons where they took the, was it college students?
Mm-hmm.
And they made them prison guards?
Yes. That's my colleague, Phil Zimbardo, who actually also has a wonderful new book. Anyway, they gave Stanford undergraduates tons of personality tests, and they chose only the most normal students. Some were guards, some were prisoners. The guards became sadistic and cruel.
They set up an artificial prison, and in this prison they assigned certain students as guards, certain students as prisoners, and these were considered the most normal of the crowd according to testing. And they found that the guards, because of their position, wound up becoming sadistic no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. There was no way out. So much so
that
they had to break the experiment.
Yes. And Zimbardo talks about the power of the situation. And when kids are bullied, it's as though the bullies are the guards. They have succumbed to their power. And they are now creating a situation where the bullied kids feel trapped and undermined. And in no way would I ever minimize the pain of that situation.
But when children are bullied and then they go home and they tell their parents, I've been bullied, and their parents are busy or dismissive, the parents say, well, go deal with it.
Yeah.
And they kind of leave them on their own, or the father says, well, go beat them up or does something like that. You wind up with this child having to make up his own mind how he's going to get through life.
Yes. And some of those children make up their minds that they're going to show who's boss. They're going to show that they're a winner, not a loser, whatever it takes. What was so compelling to me is that the Columbine shooters, they had real lives in front of them. They had gotten into good colleges. They were computer literate kids. They had a real future. And yet, in this, what I believe is their fixed mindset, they were consumed with the desire for revenge and kind of avenging their egos.
Well, part of what I also think is that if you went back to the parents of all of these people, the parents were gun collectors, the parents were people who had a tendency towards their own, almost as if it exposed the parents' desire for their own revenge, but they were in a fixed mindset, so they were stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And the children very often acted out the parents' hidden aggression. You know, I think about this just for a moment. Stephanie Dombra, who's in the studio with us. Stephanie, I got to ask you a question about Carl. Okay?
Hi.
Hi there. Stephanie, who's our associate producer. Stephanie, you were telling me a story about Carl being bullied because he was wearing a jean jacket.
Yes, that was just a couple weeks ago.
So what happens? He comes home to you, and he says to you, the kids are laughing at me because I'm wearing the, I don't have the chic jacket
from. The right clothing.
Where's the jacket?
That North Face.
From North Face? It's supposed to be North Face clothing.
Yes.
And he's wearing a jean jacket. What's your approach? How do you deal with it?
Well, initially what I did was talk to him and say, okay, what's going on? Can you tell the kids? Because some of the kids were throwing paper clips, whatever, at him and making fun. He tried to handle it himself, but he would come to me. Eventually, one of the kids got detention. And in these middle schools now, they have an anti-bullying approach. And what happened was he went to the guidance counselor and said, these kids are bothering me in my art class. And one of the kids got detention, but then that child kept spreading rumors that Carl was a tattletaler. Right? That's the term. It got worse. So the kids were then making fun of Carl. And it got painful for him. And that's when I stepped in and I said, you know, this is not the approach. I don't think he needs to get even further, you know, upset. So I spoke to the assistant principal and I said, you know, what's going on? Why isn't the teacher paying attention to his the activity in the art class?
So one of the things you try to do with your son was first to help him look at it from a flexible point of view. What part of this are you playing a part in? Is there any part? How can you deal with it? And once Carl tried to deal with it, and he no matter what happened, as
no
I imagine,
what.
You step in and you say, okay, let me see if I can be part of the system. I'll talk to some of the people there. Is it okay now?
It's okay now.
It's okay. Calm
and
down.
And he feels better, and kids stopped.
And that's part of what a parent does. A parent will some way encourage you to deal with it, and if you can't, the parent will show.
The parent needs to step in.
Do you think very often there are parents who don't step in, you know, when necessary?
A child has to feel that he or she can even approach the parents. Some parents, and again, I don't know about the Columbine parents, I'm not talking about them in particular, but some parents make their children feel that their children have to be perfect. They have to be perfect students. They have to be popular. They have to make the parents proud of them. In those cases, kids may be embarrassed to come to their parents and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, I'm not perfect. I have real problems. I'm having problems with my schoolwork. I'm having problems with my peers. The parents have to communicate that they expect their kids to be normal kids with problems and setbacks, to have faults, and that the family is a collaborative unit that works on these things together. In fact, I kind of recommend that parents sit around the dinner table each night and say, okay, I made this mistake today, or I struggled with this today, or I learned this new thing today. Where having problems and struggling and having deficiencies is a normal part of life, and that's what a family is there to deal with.
Well, a lot of people say just you've got to give your kids enough praise. Is that true? If you're going to give a positive mind, you just tell your kids that they're great and that's the answer to life?
Funny you should mention that. I have a whole research program that addresses praise. It started about 10 years ago at the height of the self-esteem movement, where people were advocating just that. Tell your kids they're great. Tell them how smart they are. When they draw a picture, tell them they're Picasso. And I had been already doing 20 years of research on what makes kids fragile in the face of failure. And I saw that the fragile kids were the ones who were already obsessed with how smart they are. Am I going to do this? Will it make me look smart? Will it make me look dumb? Am I going to make a mistake? Should I even try? And I wondered whether telling children they're smart, praising them in this way, might backfire by putting them in this fixed mindset, telling them, your intelligence, it's the most important thing on earth. It's why I love you and you have it. So we did research where we gave children problems from an IQ test. Some of them we told, wow, you're really smart at this. The other half we told, wow, you must have tried really hard. Children who were told they were really smart did not want challenge and collapsed when they faced an obstacle. It made them fragile rather than boosting their self-esteem. The children who were told you must have tried really hard loved a challenge that we then gave them. They thrived and they ended up doing far better in their IQ score on that test.
Well, when we come back, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about these findings, because praise is one of the things that we thought were a basis of a positive mind. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Just an old chunk of coal, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna glow and glow till I'm so blue, pure perfect. I'll put a smile on everybody's face. I'm gonna kneel and pray every day, lest I should become vain along the way. Well, I am just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
Coal by John Anderson. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are talking with Carol Dweck, who wrote a book, and the book is about mindset because we're interested in mindsets. So we were talking just before the break, in case you tuned in and you think we are a country western station, WBAI, right? It could be a country western station with music like that. Just in case you think that we are... We're actually an educational station. Actually, we're here to teach you. We want to teach you about things, and we want to teach you about people's mind. And one of the things we're learning about is that the fixed mind versus the flexible mind, or the fixed versus the growth mind. Mindset is a book that instructs you, tells you about some of the advantages of trying to put a little flex in your brain. Now, we were talking about children, and let's go back to this, Carol. Talking about children, what happened to those children?
The children who were praised for their intelligence didn't want challenge. They fell apart when they failed. Now, why did this happen? Because you're telling them, when you praise intelligence, this is the most important thing about you. And so when you succeed, you're smart. When you don't succeed, you're not.
So if you've got a girlfriend and you say to your girlfriend, "You're so beautiful," all the time, you think that does harm?
Well, if she thinks that you love her only because she's beautiful, she could be afraid of losing the beauty and losing your love. That's what happened with
So it makes it go to the gym and work out in the gym. I just got to keep my body a certain way because he loves me for my body.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes. And the other thing that happened with these kids was later on, the children who were praised for their intelligence lied about their score on the test.
Lied to whom?
We asked them to write a letter to a child in another school, someone who wouldn't know them. They didn't put their name on it. They'd never meet this kid. And we left a little space for them to put their scores from the IQ test. 40% of the kids lied about their score after being praised for their intelligence.
So if you spend your life being told you're so smart,
mm-hmm.
and then you do something that proves that you're mediocre,
mm-hmm.
you tend to exaggerate it because your entire self, your narcissistic, your whole self, is built on these praise that you receive
yes.
as a kid.
Yes.
You're so pretty. You're so sexy. You're so smart. What other things do people say to children? Parents and
oh,
children.
You're the next Picasso. You're the next Itzhak Perlman. You're the next Mozart. You're the next Babe Ruth.
And we never prepare the kids for any disappointment. You know, you've seen usually American Idol. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon because the program at the very beginning gives open audience to open mic to a bunch
yeah.
of people. And they discover some people who you could see were only praised by their mothers. They can't sing, but their mothers listen to them and say, you're the greatest singer of the
mm-hmm.
world. They get up on stage, and when they sing and they're told, no, I'm sorry, you don't even belong in the singing world, they're shattered, completely
yeah.
shattered, because my mother told me I had a great voice.
And that mother could have said, do you love singing? And if you want to pursue singing, let's get you some lessons. Let's develop that ability in you. And that's what parents can do as well. Your child draws a beautiful picture. Instead of saying you're the next Picasso, because I think a lot of children who are told that will retire. Say, oh, I better not make another drawing that isn't Picasso worthy. A parent can say, tell me about your picture. It's lovely. You can be enthusiastic. How did you pick those colors? Or a child comes home with a good grade. Wow, I saw you studying and it really paid off. So you're teaching them that there's a process that leads to success. Not, it's not something that comes automatically because you're smart.
You know, I go back to my my dog whisperer, who says, don't pet animals all the time, whether they're good or bad, because they will never learn
yeah.
that petting is a reward. They'll never get that idea. And so you can never discipline them, because they will always feel like
mm-hmm.
they're entitled to this petting reward. Same thing with children.
Yeah.
If you praise them all the time, they eventually get afraid. They're afraid to not be what you set them up to be.
Exactly. If you praise them all the time, they can't come to you with problems because it means they're flawed. A lot of very bright kids stop working in school. The parents get frantic. They stop working in school.
I wonder if that's why yeah. so many gay people are afraid of coming out of a closet. Do you know? You know, so many people are afraid to tell their mothers and fathers, you know, here's my story. You know, it's because there's some kind of an image that they're going to break. No, this is who I am. No, we're going to break this image of what you made me believe I am. It's a very difficult thing. So it is important when praising someone to praise them for a specific, not for a general.
And also, yes, and also praise them for a process that led to the success.
Right. Let's go a little more into that. The
yeah.
process.
The process. The effort, the strategy, the diligence, perseverance, the ideas that went into it. And that teaches them that it's through their hard work they create success, and it's through their hard work that they overcome failure. A lot of kids, though, coast to success early on, and the parents make them feel, oh, you're so smart, you're coasting and you get A's. But then when they can't coast anymore, they're afraid. They're afraid to try because they've decided effort is for dummies. Now, suddenly they need effort and they're afraid to apply it. If a parent has praised the process all along, has admired and valued effort and correction and perseverance and learning, it doesn't come as news to that child that some things in life are a struggle.
Do you think praise in relationships is very important? You know, like, I mean, if someone says to you, do I look fat in these jeans? And you say, no, you look great.
I think it's important to tell the truth in a caring and constructive way.
Go ahead. Take that one on.
Okay.
You ask me, you're my wife, and you ask me, do I look fat in these jeans? What am I supposed to say to you?
I think you look better in some of your other outfits.
Are you saying I look fat?
I think you look better in some of your other outfits.
Are you saying I look fat?
The pants are not flattering.
Are you saying that I look fat?
You may be saying that to yourself. I'm not saying that to you.
I got you. It's pretty good. You do pretty good with this stuff.
Thank you. I think there's a larger point that it's important to tell adults and children the truth whenever possible in a caring and constructive way, because children can't improve and adults can't improve if they don't have the information. We're not being kind when we say to a child who isn't reading well, oh, you're a great reader, and then, you know, just keep giving them easy stuff. We have to say, you know, you're behind in reading, but I think if we work together and you really apply yourself, and I'm going to show you how to do it, we can make great strides. If you lie to them, you're going to leave them in a bad place. If you tell the truth and you're willing to make a commitment to work with them, you can take them somewhere positive.
What do you do when they're practicing music? You know, when they go to school and the teacher puts them in a music class and sends them home with a violin, and they've got to practice their violin, right?
I've heard that sound. You encourage.
You encourage,
mm-hmm.
Even though it's gritting, making your teeth fall out.
It really is.
I mean, how do you do that? Is that part of parenting?
Hey, maybe they have violins with headsets now, so the parent doesn't have to.
You know, that's not a bad idea. What happens, Stephanie? Let me ask you this one too. As a parent who have many very, very musical children, right? What happens when they're playing something and it grates your ears?
Well, the only time my kids can't play is when I have clients in the house because the drums are just too loud. But I don't experience it as grating, honestly. I get all this information already and I believe it, so I try. I'm not perfect by any means. I try to apply it. So, you know, I'll say put your headphones on if you're playing.
Yeah, I think it must be that thing that happens with parents with children, like you don't smell the child's doo-doo. You know, after a while, it's like this is my child growing, and it doesn't mean all that much.
And also, if you've listened through the screeching, and then it turns melodious and mellifluous, you can rejoice with that child.
Yeah. And all the time you're being honest.
Yes.
Is right? Is that the idea the entire time?
Yes, and I'll always say when Carl's practicing trumpet and it does sound screechy, I'll say, you know, I know if you put some more breath into that, you can get a better sound.
Oh, so you'll let him know when you don't like the sound.
Yes. I'll say, I know you can make that sound smooth. And, you know, my daughter plays piano, and I definitely say, oh, I just want to sit and listen to that because it does sound so melodious, as you described. So I have been trying to implement that. You know, it just is an important piece.
And you read articles.
I read articles.
You read articles in New York Magazine.
Right.
And so you want to tell the very process? She reads an article in the New York Magazine. She comes to me and says, Armand, there's this interesting person wrote this article in New York Magazine, How Not to Talk to Your Kids. And that's how it all started, and that's how we got Carol Dweck here. What was the feature of this article, How Not to Talk to Your Kids, Carol?
It was an article written mostly about my work by Poe Bronson. They discovered my research And they wrote a feature story. They were actually shocked that such expansive praise could be bad for kids. And they knew that this research had existed for a while, but most of the parents they polled were not familiar with it and thought that praising your child's intelligence was a tremendous gift to them. So they wanted to educate parents about this process.
How does a mindset relate to depression?
Well, we've done some research on that recently, and we found that, first of all, depression is more common in a fixed mindset because setbacks and rejections say something permanent and about you and make you feel like your failure or your rejection will last forever. But a more interesting thing we found is that people in a growth versus a fixed mindset do different things when they're depressed. Now, I'm not talking about a clinical depression that requires hospitalization, but I'm talking about our everyday depression that might last for days or weeks. And what we found was that when people were in a growth mindset, the more depressed they felt, the more active they became. They problem-solved more. They made sure to do their chores. They made sure to keep up with their work. They felt like, this is not going to get me. I'm going to keep my life in order. And lo and behold, when they came out of their depression, their lives were more likely to be intact. In a fixed mindset, the more depressed people felt, the more they let things go.
In our guest is Carol Dweck, Dr. Carol Dweck, the name of the book, Mindset. Mindset's falling in love. I know you covered that. And I think we just began to mention it. Let's talk a little more about it, Carol.
When people in a fixed mindset fall in love, they feel, oh, this was meant to be. We are a perfect match, and we have a perfect relationship. If it goes bad, they feel bitter and cheated. People in a growth mindset, it takes work. If there are problems, they don't feel that they've been betrayed. They feel like, we better work on this.
So people in a fixed mindset, falling in love is kind of really a limited thing. You have to fit right into everything I believe. And if you don't slide in, then eventually you betray me because I fell in love with you. I'm making a bet that people with fixed mindsets fall more in love and have greater disappointments than the people with flexible mindsets. Because maybe you don't even fall in love. Maybe you grow in love.
Exactly.
Maybe falling in love is when you trip over and you bump your head.
Yes.
And that's how you break your legs.
Yes.
Whereas growing in love is an evolution.
Yes.
It's a whole different process.
Yes. And you mentioned something before about how the beginning of a relationship is always exciting, the most exciting, involving part. So maybe people in a growth mindset can fall in love and then grow in love.
Do you, but, you know, a lot of people think in relationships, if it's natural, it'll just happen naturally and you don't have to work at it. What's this work at it? I mean, most people just think it's, you know, the work is, the less you have to work, the better the relationship.
Well, I don't want to say that a relationship that you work on all the time is a good relationship, but every relationship will bump up against problems. You want to do this, I want to do that. I want to move here, you don't. There will always be problems and issues. In a growth mindset, that's normal, and that is a process to be engaged in, not an indictment of the relationship.
My guest again, as I said, Mindset, Carol Dweck. What about mind reading, Carol?
Well, in a fixed mindset, couples believe in mind reading. They believe that they should share. This is research that's been done by a researcher, Raymond Nee. They think they should share all of each other's thoughts and wishes and perceptions. they think they are one. So that if the other person suddenly thinks something that you don't think or does something that you wouldn't do, it's a shock to the system.
You know, what's really interesting about fixed mindsets. When it gets to the point when you get a little older and one of the other person starts losing their memory, right? If you're in a fixed mindset, boy, you are in trouble. Because if your mate forgets things, you consider it a personal insult.
Yes.
I told you three times. How could you forget? How could you do this? It's like it's a personal insult that you forgot. You know, and it's just, I forget. It's my privilege.
Yeah. In a fixed mindset, that could be a betrayal. You're not the person I thought you were. As opposed to, whoa, this is my lifelong mate or my longstanding mate, and we need to work with this together.
No correlation that you know of or no study has been done between Alzheimer's and fixed mindset versus flexible mindset. It's probably too late because by then you have a person with the Alzheimer's.
No study that I know of has been done, but more and more research is showing that an active mind stays intact longer. And actually, we are initiating some research with older people, seeing if a growth mindset keeps the mind active and therefore intact longer. And we're excited to see whether this is the case.
It better be the case. You know, it better be the case. If we wind up with, nah, it makes no difference, as it does in some research, then if you have a fixed mindset and you've done the research, you commit suicide. Right? So you can't afford to commit do research if you're so set on the outcome. Stephanie?
I just want to interject that we had that wonderful guest, Piers Brosnan, who did report that in a study with nuns, sisters, in a convent, when sisters, when they all died, they actually did some tests on the brain functions or the brain structures and saw that the nuns who were active and involved and learning had the signs of Alzheimer's but no symptoms. The nuns who died with Alzheimer's, their brain structures and the things that were going on were obviously severely damaged. So the activity is the key to Alzheimer's at that stage.
And that comes with an active mind.
Active mind.
It's the old weight of the brain. We used to weigh brains when I was a kid. When I was doing my lab research at Albert Einstein, we'd have to weigh the brains of the mice. And that's how we would tell who learned and who didn't learn. Ooh, what a horrible job. So, Carol, bullies. I want to talk about bullies and victims and this revenge idea. Just one quick minute. Do you think that the bullies and the revenge is kind of related to this fixed mind, flexible mind?
I do. I haven't done any research on bullies, but we have done research showing that in a fixed mindset, you get self-esteem from looking down on other people. In a growth mindset, you get self-esteem by looking up to other people and learning from
them. That's beautifully said. Let me repeat that again. In a fixed mindset, you get esteem by stepping on the bodies of other people, you know, by looking down on people. In a growth mindset, you get self-esteem by
looking up to other people and learning from them.
Very interesting. Well, this has been fascinating. My guest is Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K, Dr. Carol Dweck. The name of the book, Mindset. Carol, I want to thank you for staying in New York. I know you stayed by and changed your plans to be with us here. You know, I want to thank you for making that special trip for us. I hope we have you back. The name of the book, Mindset, available. And we are going to be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 1 p.m. And if you wanted to hear a copy of today's show, you could go to the website, thepositivemind.com, or you could go to, you could call my office, 757-4488. Be back with you tomorrow, my friends.
a man. This is stupid. This is uncomfortable.
It's for nothing anyway, so why should I care?
So if you are free, no chains on your feet, what's stopping you from going ahead, man?
But they don't want us to.
Who they? Which they? You know what? Let's not really get into this now. I invite you to the Caribbean Dialogue on April 26th at 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Public Library. They're going to have as a guest speaker Professor Vereen Shepherd from the University of the West Indies, who's going to give a talk on the legacy of the slave trade. 200 years later, Thursday, April 26, 2007, Brooklyn Public Library at Grand Army Plaza, 7 p.m. sharp. Don't miss it.
For more information, 718-230-2100 or visit www.caribbeandialogue.org.